This week on Pop of Culture, we talk to a few artists from Anderson.
This is profound that these are all women. They've all had a great influence on me and the community.
A few artists from across Indiana.
This population of people, they appreciate the arts.
And one from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Their marketing for it was, we're going to show Vegas what real art is. And all the local artists were like, what have we been doing for years?
All that and the best arts events this week, coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. In a few minutes, we'll talk to artists from across East Central Indiana who converged in one space last weekend.
But first, for more than a decade, Justin Favela has been exploring what it means to be a queer Guatemalan Mexican American making art. He recently visited Ball State University's campus to share his journey with students, faculty, the public, and us. Justin, thanks so much for stopping by Pop of Culture.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am so glad that you're here. For those who may not be familiar with your vibrant large scale, and when I say large scale, we're serious about the large scale, how would you describe it?
Yeah, my work is mostly sculptural, and I do a lot of site-specific installation. And many years ago, I developed a style of making work in a piñata style. And so I started to think of what the piñata meant as an object, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's about celebration. It's about destruction. It's so colorful and fun. And so I started making objects, and eventually it became a medium, and I started making murals in a piñata style and full-on immersive installations.
You mentioned installations and the time commitment. Walk me through kind of an installation, one of your sculptures from start kind of to finish.
Yeah. So normally back in the day, I would make everything on site. So I use the museum as my studio. And usually museums have like 1 or 2 months to kind of switch over exhibitions.
Yeah.
Maybe 1 month, maybe 3 weeks. And so, I'm known for making these big murals, these big piñata murals. Yeah. And you know, I try to get away with covering as much wall space as I can. And so the Sugar Hill Children's Museum of Art and Storytelling in New York, they commissioned me to cover their entire museum in murals. So I was there for a whole month.
Whoa.
With a team of 10 assistants. And we covered the entire museum in these big landscape murals that I took from a lot of children's movies to create this kind of fantasy kind of landscape. Yeah. And so that was really fun. So it just takes it takes a long time. All the paper is hand cut, hand fringed, and then we glue the paper directly onto, you know, either lined walls or just straight onto the wall, depending on what the museum will let me do. And that takes a while because it is, you know, it is a process to get all that paper on there.
That's amazing. And it must be such an incredible feeling to see it completed, especially something on such a large scale, taking over a whole museum.
That's favorite amazing. Part when it's done.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part. Yeah.
And then you can just take it all
yes,
in.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, right. It's such a wonderful representation of Latinx culture. Mm-hmm. How did you decide or how did you determine the materials to best tell that cultural story?
You know, honestly, it was a response to the expectations of a Latinx artist.
Yeah.
When I was in school, I noticed that I was pushed to make art about my identity more than, you know, my white colleagues, you know, yeah. in school. And so I thought that was interesting. So I thought, well, what is like the cheesiest, corniest symbol that would represent like a Mexican American or a Guatemalan American yeah. in the United States? And I thought the piñata is this universal symbol that everybody understands. And, you know, you could buy a piñata at any major store. You go yes. to Walmart or whatever. There's piñatas for sale, right? Yeah. And so I thought people would have an immediate connection to the object because ever since I was a young artist, I thought it was kind of scary to go to art museums if you're not part of the art world.
Wow.
And so making art to me that was accessible, that maybe a younger version of myself would understand and relate to, is important to me. And I think that's why I kind of stuck with this medium.
Oh, I love that. How do you feel your art, you mentioned the accessibility of it.
Yeah.
How do you think it has changed kind of the conversation around Latinx art and artists?
Yeah, the there's this kind of hierarchy of materials, mm-hmm. you know, in the art world or the subjects that you talk about. So, you know, as a person of color or Latinx person, a lot of times you are expected to make work about your identity, about your biography, about your trauma. Mm-hmm. And so this is a way to do that, but also kind of push back a little yeah. bit, you know? And so, and using a material like paper and tissue, like tissue paper, paper mache, it really pushes the boundaries. And I like doing that because some people call my work like contemporary craft, mm. you know, and some fine artists, you know, might be offended by that, but I love it. I love when my work kind of transcends those labels,
yes.
right? And so I can be showing at, you know, the Denver Art Museum and yeah. also be showing at the community center down the street, at the botanical garden, you know, in Nebraska. And
yes.
I can be, you know, showing at a big museum in New York at the same time. And I love that because it's many different audiences. And I think the medium kind of lends itself to that.
Yeah. And I really appreciate the fact that you are returning to your feelings as going to a museum when you were younger and how it seemed intimidating and, this seems so fine art and mm-hmm. fancy. And it goes back to the whole accessibility that art should be for everyone.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that. Let's talk a little bit about okay. your journey. You mentioned art school, but I'm curious to learn about, you know, when did art become a passion for you? How did that happen?
You know, I wasn't an artist, like a visual artist or think of myself as an artist when uh-huh. I was a kid. That just wasn't, you know, for immigrant families, being an artist is not an option, you know? And I'm from Las Vegas, and we're like an industry hospitality town.
Yes.
So the expectation for me was to get a nice casino
go
job
right
and,
yes.
and stay there my whole life,
yes.
you know? And so when I got to college, I got to college on a tuba scholarship.
What?
Not because I was good at playing the tuba. Just because I could hold it, you know, that's what it takes. Or that would have took for me. So I got into UNLV and I was in there for a couple years and I realized, yeah, I don't have the passion to play the tuba for the rest of my life. And I took an art class. I took a drawing class. Shout out to Wendy Kavek. She was my first art teacher in school.
Awesome.
And after that class, I fell in love with it. I was not great at drawing, but I just had so much fun in that class that I decided to take a design class. And then after I took sculpture, it was over. I found my medium. I said, oh, I love sculpture.
Wow.
And I started making cardboard work even back then.
Yeah. When did you feel that you finally kind of like broke through all of the noise and you were kind of recognized artist?
Oh, it was probably my first solo show in,
yeah.
in 2011. It was at the Clark County Government Center.
Hey.
Yeah, shout out to them.
Yeah.
It's this really awkward, it was this like really awkward installation space. It's like it's like a rotunda, a big open space
yeah.
in this building.
Yeah.
And I was kind of poking fun at this multi-million dollar art collection that MGM Resorts had just acquired and,
yes.
and their marketing for it was, we're going to show Vegas what real art is. And all the local artists were like, what have we been doing for years here?
Right.
You know, like we're like opening galleries and making a
absolutely.
Movement happen there.
Yeah.
And so I made like cardboard, really like slapdash homemade versions of the work of some of the sculptures responses to what MGM bought. And I put them in the government center because their new casino was called City Center. So I thought it was funny. Government Center, City Center.
Yes.
And that show got a lot of attention and people got it. They immediately understood what I was saying with the parody, you know, with the commentary. And it was written about in the Wall Street Journal because, you know, I spent maybe $200 on materials and MGM spent, you know, over $50 million or something on the collection.
Oh, my gosh.
And so seeing that response, also the work that I made for it was amazing. I was like, okay, I can do this. I guess I'm a real artist now.
It's legit.
I've graduated. Yeah. I've had a solo show. And that momentum has just been going ever since.
Wow. And that kind of leads straight to the book, kind of, which has your work from 2011.
Yeah.
When you had that first Fantasia, a decade of practice.
Yes.
You said before that you never thought when you were in art school that you would have a book of your work and that stories of artists like you were rarely told. Tell me more. Why did you think that?
I think it's just, it's kind of what I was taught, you know? Thinking back to my art history classes, we learned about the White Canon, you know? And so, and it's what I love to poke fun at the most. So it did really inform my practice, the concepts behind my work. And I mean, I went to University of Nevada, Las Vegas, right? And it's one of the most, if not the most diverse campus. The student body is the most diverse in the nation, but the faculty is not, right? And so I think it's important for that faculty to reflect the student body at least a little bit.
And I
didn't really realize that until after I graduated. They hired a Mexican art historian who taught Mexican art history. And I went and sat in on one of his classes after I graduated. And I kept going week after week because I didn't realize that I didn't learn so much important art history, you know, that they never taught us. So I think that's where it stems from, you know?
Why is it important for you to visit colleges and meet with students as you're doing here at Ball State?
I think, you know, I was really influenced by the visiting artists that went to my school when I was in college. And you remember the artists that were not nice and you had no relation to and had a really boring talk.
Yes.
And I vowed that I would never be that artist. Even back then. But then I remember there's like three or four artists that have deeply influenced my work and my maybe work ethic or the way that I conduct myself around younger artists because of the way that they treated me, like as a human, you know, like on the same level, which was wild to me because it was these famous artists, you know? And so ever since I started doing talks and going to schools and visiting schools, I kind of just let down that wall and I'm just trying to be honest with students and have conversations that I wish, more experienced artists would have had with me.
Yes.
And I think, you know, the art world is this mysterious thing because there's a lot of gatekeepers and there's a lot of there's not a lot of transparency. And so I try to combat that by being just like really open and honest about, you know, anything with the students.
I love that. I love that. So what's next for you, Justin?
Oh, my gosh. I actually have big projects coming up that I can't announce. I know, but I do have a solo show coming up that I can talk about at the Ulrich Museum in Wichita, Kansas. So I'll be back on this side of the world. I'm so excited. In August. That will open in early August. But keep an eye out. I have a really big installation coming up at a big national museum pretty soon.
So we will stay tuned for that. Well, thank you so much for coming into the studios today. And thank you for visiting the campus and really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Justin Favela is an artist based in Las Vegas, working across the United States. You're listening to Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. The Indiana Artisan Marketplace was last weekend in Indianapolis. At the marketplace, dozens of artisans converge into one building.
We set out to find the artists representing East Central Indiana. As we made our way into the marketplace, we found some familiar voices, like artist Carol Burke.
Carol, good to see you out here.
Good to see you too.
So the booth is very busy. Can you describe the atmosphere right now?
Yeah, actually, the doors open up and it's dead for a while. Yeah. And then suddenly people have walked through and they've decided to come back. And so it's been packed.
It is packed. I mean, there's barely room to move in your area. What does it mean to you to be an Indiana artisan, Carol?
Well, it's a wonderful brand to be a part of, and the show here is one of the best venues that I do, so it means a lot to me to be able to continue to make art and sell it. It's wonderful.
Describe the things you have at your booth today.
Well, I have a lot of functional work. I have plates and bowls. I have a lot of sculptural work, and that's been great. Those have gone really fast.
Oh, wow.
I have canisters and miniatures. Yeah, there's a lot in here.
Wow. What do you hope to get out of participation in the marketplace today?
Actually, some rest. I've been so busy putting this all together, and I spend a lot of time, you know, planning out the layout, and I think I'm just exhausted right now. So,
So today you just get to enjoy meeting people.
Yes, and seeing old customers and meeting new customers. Yeah.
We also found silk artist Carrie Wright, who we spoke with almost a year ago in season one.
So can we ask you a couple questions?
You can. I lost my voice yesterday.
You did a little bit.
Carrie has been an Indiana artisan since 2018.
Wonderful. And so talk to me, describe for the listeners, if you will, what you have at your booth today.
Most of my booth consists of hand-painted silk art framed ready for the wall.
Yes.
I do have some wearables as well because people love great hand-painted silk wearables.
Yes.
At an art show especially, so mostly though it's framed art.
What do you love most about participating in the marketplace?
I think my very favorite thing about the marketplace is getting to meet the customer face to face. So much of what we do as artists is done alone in a room. It's very solitary. And so even if people are not buying your art, it is very rewarding to get the feedback and just to get face-to-face with people.
Yes. And I think, because I know I do it, so I know other people have to do it, and you're probably seeing it. People that haven't seen this type of work, there is a look on the face.
Right.
There is the eyes widen and the, you even get audible sounds of, oh my gosh, this is something I've never seen before.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
yes,
which has to be amazing to, you know, to feel that as an artist.
It's amazing, and also it's nice and refreshing and sometimes enlightening to get just the general public's reaction to encountering the art.
Yes.
It can be very informative.
Absolutely.
In good and bad ways.
Yeah.
And about then, we were ready for a snack.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Michelle Kinsey. Oh, you're just going to put some candy right in my hand, aren't you? Heck yeah, y'all.
The man handing us candy was Jay Noel. He and his wife own Abbott's Candies in Hagerstown and Indianapolis.
And you have been in existence how long?
Since 1890.
1890. The oldest candy company.
In the state of Indiana.
That's pretty cool.
And also our building that we're manufacturing candy in was actually built in 1852.
What?
So there's a lot of history to the building that we're in. Plus the candy business.
Wow,
yes.
that is amazing. Now, how long have you been an Indiana artisan?
I think probably about 6 or 7 years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why is it important to you to be an Indiana artisan?
Well, because what you see here in this building is the cream of the crop of about anything you can see.
And I'm sure some people listening right now may be like, wait a minute, candy?
as an Indiana artisan. That's interesting. But Indiana artisan has always included those who do food, candy, beverages, all of those things. Why do you think that's important to include those that are doing things outside what people may consider
art?
Art.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're always looking, if you're looking for gifts, if you're looking for yourself, if you're looking for anything, you're always looking for the best quality. You're also looking for the best value.
Mm-hmm. And as soon as I walked up, you handed me this tasty little nugget. Is this a...
That's a sample of our caramel.
Oh.
Yes, plain.
Listen, it was probably totally inappropriate of me to go ahead and pop that caramel in my mouth, but I couldn't help it. And I'm talking with my mouth full.
That's fine. We approve that.
We're gonna have to end it here because I'm gonna need to stop and savor this.
After sufficient savoring, we spoke to Lethay Piggies, owner of John Tom's Barbecue.
We started in 2006.
Mm-hmm. In a kitchen in Muncie.
Yeah, well, I tell you, it goes further back than that. I actually started trying to recreate my grandfather's sauce in 1998, I believe it was. Yeah. And then that went on for like almost 5 years.
Yeah.
And I created this sauce, what people know as John Tom's Original.
Yes.
It's not my grandfather's. I never duplicated his, but this is what I came up with his inspiration behind.
As close as possible. And since then, you've branched out.
Yeah.
So describe what it looks like, what it feels like, what happens in the agriculture building at the Indiana State Fairgrounds during Indiana Artisan.
Oh my goodness. First of all, the crowd will start building. I mean, it gets to a point in here where, like, we can't even take a bathroom break because our booth is so, we're just inundated with people.
Going to the bathroom.
CeCe's able to get a bathroom break right now, but it'll get a point where we can't get away. And then, you know, this population of people, they appreciate the arts.
Yeah.
And everyone here, I mean, we've created something with our own hands. So it's, you know, you're not walking into a big box store and picking up this stuff.
Yeah.
One thing that stood out at the Indiana Artisan Marketplace is the variety of arts on display. Like previous pop of culture guest, rug hooker Tracy Burns.
How does it feel to be at the Indiana Artisan Marketplace today?
Well, it's a little overwhelming. This is my first time here.
Congratulations!
I've been Indiana Artisan since 2020.
Yeah.
So, but this is the first time I've actually had a chance to actually be here as a vendor. So.
Wow. So tell me how it feels like when the doors opened this morning. What were you feeling?
Well, it's taken me a long time to get enough pieces even set up. So, so it's a little overwhelming. Okay, did I make enough? Did I not make enough? Am I going to sell anything? Okay, if I sell anything, I got to make more.
So, I mean, that's a good problem.
Yeah, I'm an artist, right? You know,
yes,
so you got to make more.
Yeah, exactly. So what are you hoping to get out of your first Indian Artisan Marketplace experience today?
Well, I teach classes. So if, you know, some people look at it and think, well, I can't really afford that, but they might want to learn how to do it themselves.
Oh, I love that. So you want to share, you know, how you do all of this, how you create all this beautiful art with others. You want them to do it.
Greg Adams makes art from pussy willows.
So where do you get your materials?
Well, I'm a dumpster diver.
Nice.
My wife says I can't do it anymore. But she doesn't always know. But sometimes.
It's going to be on the radio.
Just
make sure she doesn't listen to this one episode.
And it gives you that adrenaline rush to get back out.
Yes, absolutely. Why do you like to be at this marketplace?
Because of the other market. Well, see, this was a group of people who were chosen specifically
for their
to be in this
and their
group.
Art. Mm-hmm.
And it's quite an honor to be.
Absolutely.
You know, I was very honored, and I take it seriously. I've known these people most of my life and done shows and things.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's a community, you know.
Yeah.
It really is. The first show they had here was in 13 years ago.
Wow, that's
And
great.
I was fortunate enough to win Best of Show that year.
The first year out?
And I cried.
Well, but, I love that.
Being an Indiana artisan meant something different to each artist we spoke to.
But there was one word they all used to describe the feeling here. Community.
The Indiana Artisan Marketplace is an IPR underwriter.
This is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. This weekend in Anderson, there's an art exhibit put together by and celebrating women. IPR's Thomas Ouellette spoke to two of those women.
Simply called the Women's Art Event, it'll display works across different mediums at A-Town Center in Anderson on Friday, April 4th. I've got two of the artists and organizers in front of me right now. Could you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Yes, I'm Christina Peffer.
Hi, I'm Tabitha Fletcher.
So tell me a little bit about what you guys do and what your role is in the upcoming art exhibit.
So I am a resident artist at A-Town Center, and I am putting on a women's history event. And Tabitha is one of the women artists that I've met through the community, and she is going to be a guest artist.
Yeah, and so Christina, I've talked to you before, and I talked to you about your Beatrix Potter exhibit. Now, this is kind of including that in it, right? This is about women's history, and Beatrix is going to be included in this.
Right. So it's basically all of my exhibits that I have done in the past year are all going to be back at A-Town. Beatrix was the first one. She started it all. All of my exhibits have traveled. They include Dorothy, The Wizard of Oz, and I did a Frida Kahlo exhibit, and then The Tale of Two Cities. I also did a Christmas one, but obviously that one's not going to be involved. But the newest ones are the Mad Hatter and the Queen of Hearts.
Awesome. And so this exhibit, this women's art exhibit, what gave you the idea to start it or to get it going?
Well, actually, it was when all of the exhibits have gone out into the community. They've been at the library, the Museum of Art. They've been all over, and everywhere they've gone, they have brought me connections. So I wanted to, when they were all done traveling, they all had to come back to A-Town, and I had them all set up, and I was like, wow, this is profound that these are all women. They've all had a great influence on me and the community, and wouldn't it be a great experience for me to get a hold of a bunch of other women that I have met through them, bring their art in, and show how women can change the narrative right now.
And so, Tabitha, you are one of the artists included in this big exhibit. Can you tell me a little bit about what your art piece is?
Sure. So I currently have six pieces that will be in the exhibit, and they showcase cups of tea. So each one is a little bit different in the emotion that they present. The whole idea with tea is that it really just, I believe, captures divine femininity. It captures the female experience in so many ways. We come to spaces with a lot of duality at sometimes, right? Like, we can enter a space and be very calming, very soothing. We can also enter a space and be super energetic and vibrant. We can enter a space and sometimes say things that end up hurting, right? So we have all of this that we carry with us all the time. And so tea, in my pieces, it's a way for us to kind of experience that on canvas. The pieces do have a little bit of sculptural elements because a lot of the pieces have both floral and fruit designs. And with those, the idea is that fruit comes from what we say and how we interact with the world and how we carry ourselves. Fruit in the form of edible fruit or flowers, right? Like, so the seed being planted and us us being part of that. So the sculptural elements are pieces of fruit and flowers that kind of come off of the space. So I've also got a really cool collaboration with another group of women in our community. They aren't visual artists, but they work with tea and crystals and are just really cool people. And it's from Twisted Twigs in Anderson. They actually have looked at each of my pieces and paired a tea sampling with each one. I do have a limited number of tea samplings, but as you come in and you look at the pieces and you see, like Chrissy said, which area kind of draws to you, which emotions draw to you, then you can pick one tea to go with that. So, yeah.
Now, that's a very creative idea for an art piece. What gave you the inspiration to make that?
Which part? The tea?
The tea part.
The tea itself? Okay. So it came from a really, really tricky spot in life. I was dealing with a lot of grief, depression, and sometimes that just really is, it comes out in anger, it comes out in just engulfing ways that you can't breathe sometimes. And so it came from a time when I was... I'm just going to be real. I was in the shower and I was freaking out and I was trying to calm myself down because sometimes I feel like that's the only place I can calm down. And so I was like, you need to calm down, Tabby. You just need to calm down. You need a glass of calm down tea. Ooh, you need tea. Okay, tea. And I got out and I made myself a cup of tea. And it was just in those moments that it just showed me how powerful things are. I don't know. And then I just wanted to paint it. And so sometimes we have words for our inspiration, and sometimes we don't.
Now, Chrissy, for the event, what day is it going to take place and where?
It's Friday, April 4th, from 5 to 8. It is the Art Alliance's first Friday event in Anderson, so there's other things going on at different venues downtown. They can just travel down Meridian and they'll be able to hit a couple other of the great spots that are in downtown Anderson. So,
and so how many other women are involved so far?
So there's Whisper Schroeder, Olivia Willard, Tabitha Fletcher, and then Kelly DeMarcus. So,
and so how is this exhibit going to look when someone enters the building? Is it going to be a bunch of different sets or, you know, art pieces set up all over the place?
Well, it's not so much like a typical gallery. It's going to be set up with each theme. So kind of like a cohesive, immersive experience. So Beatrice is made out of newspaper and chicken wire. And Kelly's pieces are actually... done on cardboard and newspaper, and they are themed more towards the LGBTQT community. And so they merge perfectly together. Like, that's the point, is that we're all very different artists, but our art all works together. And that's how we're going to change, and that's how we're going to make a new reality than what we're looking at right now.
Yeah. You spoke a second ago about how this is about showing that women can change the narrative. Can you go into a bit more detail about that?
Well, I feel like a lot of people are questioning what they can do right now with, if you get caught up in the news and the politics and everything else, really what it comes down to is, if you're going to be the change, what can you do? And I'm not talking big scale. I'm talking, it's all in how you react to the simplest things.
And I guess, Tabitha, if there was a woman out there who was thinking about getting into art and making something, but was unsure, was, you know, anxious about it, what would you tell her?
Oh, yeah. So anxiety is... it's huge and big and real, and it will steal your joy. There's a book called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, and he references something called the resistance. It's just this idea that whenever we go to level up in life, things are going to come to try and stop us from leveling up. So if you are fighting anxiety or any type of resistance to creating, just put your pen to the paper. It doesn't matter. Start with a scribble. You don't have to have fancy stuff. You can use your fingers. You can go out and grab some mud. Just move your body and allow that creative energy to flow through your fingertips. You got it.
Well said. A big thank you to both Christina Peffer and Tabitha Fletcher again for coming all the way down here to Muncie to make this happen. I can't wait to see the exhibit when it opens. For Pop of Culture, I'm Thomas Ouellette.
It's Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey.
Our next guest can answer the question, what are you working on? And add an item to our arts calendar with an event in Muncie this weekend.
The Magic City Brew Fest is back. It will be April 5th at Mad Jack's in downtown Muncie. And here to tell us all about it is Cheryl Crowder from the Downtown Development Partnership. Cheryl, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me.
Well, tell us all about it. This is the second year.
Yes.
For the Brew Fest.
Yes.
Right?
We did it last year in conjunction with the Eclipse.
Yes.
As part of our offerings as a community to mm-hmm. visitors. And it went so well, we decided we'd just go ahead and add that to our rotation of events for downtown. So here we are, April 5th, 2 to 5 at Mad Jack's. Doing it again.
Yes. And so this is obviously, as the name implies, it is a brew fest, but there's so much more going on, right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the brews and the other things involved first. So not only do you have craft beer, but there are distilleries. And what are some other things?
There are wineries. We have some NA options this year, which is like a really big thing coming up in the market.
It is.
I can't even tell you how many people I know personally who have decided that that's kind of the path that they want to take.
That's right.
And there's so many options out there. So Floral Beverage, which is out of Gas City, it's a family-owned farming family, 5 generations, who have turned all of their fields from normal agricultural crops to things that they can brew with.
Yeah, to botanicals.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. So they're going to be here, and I'm excited about that because they're so close. And then the Health Club, which is in Indianapolis and Broad Ripple, they have an actual brick and mortar store. So they will bring in some of their products too. I feel like at this point we need to call it just a beverage fest rather than a brew fest. So maybe we'll make that adjustment next year. We absolutely do have craft beers, many of them local.
Right.
We also have St. Benedict's Brew Works, which is in Ferdinand, Indiana. It's a long ways away.
Oh.
So we're trying to figure that out. We do a buzz tour map to connect all these places. You could do a little day trip with a designated driver and visit all these spots, but they're like 3.5 hours away, but they are so cool. They, their brewery is like the nuns are the ones who brew.
Oh my gosh.
And it's an old convent where their factory exists.
Wow.
So I'm really excited that they're going to be joining us. And then the spirits, we've got Moondrops Distillery, Oakley Brothers, which is in Anderson, mm-hmm. and West Fork Whiskey out of Westfield.
Wow.
So yeah, we've got a good selection.
Lots to enjoy.
Yes.
I like that it is beyond craft beer, that is beyond what you would normally find at a brew fest.
Right.
I love that you keep adding to it, which is awesome. And speaking of adding to it, let's talk about the other things that you're going to be able to do at Mad Jack's while you're sampling these amazing tasty beverages.
Yes.
What are some things we could do?
So Muncie Makers Market, Miss Moth Dinner, who is just amazing and has so many talented makers mm-hmm. who follow her, basically. Anywhere she goes, they go to. I think she'll have 20 plus of those vendors there. And then also the residents of Mad Jack's.
Yeah.
Part of the reason that we really wanted to go to Mad Jack's was the whole idea of Magic City. which was the original, one of the original names for Muncie. Mm-hmm. And it was because of the gas boom and industrialization, and it literally was a magic city. But that was all about makers too.
Yes.
And Mad Jacks is all about the makers.
Absolutely.
So some of the resident makers, obviously Guardian Brewery is one of them, mm-hmm. and they'll be pouring, but they will also be open with their food, and they'll be giving a brewery tour.
Wow.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Mad Axe is offering 10-minute sessions of axe throwing. So if you've never done it before, you just love it and you're itching to throw an axe. Yeah.
Let me tell you something. I mean, once the nerves subside, because you can't help but think, is this thing going to fly out of my hands?
I'm going to kill somebody.
But it really is. Once you do it once, you're like, ooh, let me do that again.
Good.
Yeah.
Right. So they'll be open, I think, from 2:30 to 4:30 are their hours during the Brewfest. The Aerial Annex, which also lives there, will be doing some demonstrations,
nice.
Which is always fun to look up and see somebody hanging from a silk harness.
And literally dancing in the air.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's like they fly. Mm-hmm. It's just so gorgeous. The Design Lab and the Shipyard,
yes,
will be open for tours. We're not letting anybody actually use any of these things, like lots of mechanical things
idea.
There. But if you've never had a chance to actually explore Mad Jacks, like, this is a great opportunity to not only get your beverage on, but like really check this place out. It's been just amazing.
New things happening there all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it makes sense to go and see what's happening and see how you can get involved.
Yeah. And then the songwriter sessions. I'm so excited about this, like, new barn of talent that is coming together to share what they know. All, you know, original music songwriters. Sally Fierce has been fabulous in helping me get some, and I honestly, Michelle was real helpful too.
Full disclosure, I am a member of the Fierce, and I do participate in songwriter sessions. Full disclosure, people.
I love it. Well, anyway, they're bringing four of their songwriters to entertain us through Brewfest.
Yeah.
So Lynn and Sally are playing. Steve Donahoe,
yes.
Is that right? Okay, yeah. Jansen and Matt Ruddick all will have a few minutes to share their talents with us. So,
yeah, which is really kind of perfect for that Brewfest kind of atmosphere.
Yeah.
Just some really nice guitar-based original tunes that you can sip tasty beverages to.
Yes,
right? Yeah.
I love it. So we will have a couple of food vendors as well out in the courtyard area.
Oh, nice.
On the Jackson Street side of the building. Three Bears Concessions will be there, and Yardbird, who grills up some amazing stuff. Mm. So we just have a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
There's parking available. I know that's a big question for people when they're going to Mad Jacks. There is a parking map available on our website, which is downtownmuncie.org/Brewfest. Or if you just go to downtownmuncie.org, click events, and you'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a map of all the available parking where we have permission. And there are now like hundreds of new parking spaces on the street, too.
Yeah.
So use those up. All the parking lots outside of Merchants Bank and the Community Foundation are available. The normal Mad Jacks parking lots. Check the map out. It'll show you all the spots.
Cheryl, where can people get tickets if they're interested in going?
So you can go to our website, and there's a link to get tickets at downtownmuncie.org/Brewfest.
Awesome. That is a lot. We should point out that this is a age 21 and older event.
Yes. And
so
we encourage you to drink responsibly.
Of age. That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Cheryl, thank you so much for coming in to tell us all about the Magic City Brew Fest. We look forward to a day of fun and enjoying some beverages and some music and some local makers and Mad Jacks together as a community.
It's going to be magic.
Yes.
Thank you.
Kara, you know what time it is.
I do.
It's time for the arts calendar. We have a lot to get to, so let's jump right in. Muncie Civic Theater is presenting Jesus Christ Superstar on the main stage April 4th through the 19th. With lyrics and music by Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber, Jesus Christ Superstar follows the last week of Christ's life. The story, told entirely through song, is filled with a mix of rock, gospel, folk, and funk, featuring unforgettable songs, high-energy dances, and powerful storytelling. MuncieCivic.org is the place to go for more info.
I love that. The University Singers 62nd Annual Spectacular is Friday and Saturday, April 4th and 5th at Ball State's Emmons Auditorium. The University Singers have been recognized since 1964 as one of America's top collegiate entertainment organizations. BSU.edu/Emmons has details.
That's a long time. That's a lot of jazz hands. That's a lot of jazz hands. The Glass Alliance Egg Sale and Hunt is on from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, April 5th at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens. Grab your family and friends to help you search for plastic eggs hidden in and around Oakhurst Gardens. While you explore the gardens, be on the lookout for a special visit from the Easter Bunny. More eggs can be found at the Education Center in Oakhurst Gardens during the annual Spring Glass Egg Sale, where you can take home a beautifully handcrafted glass egg created by students in the Maryland K. Glick Center for Glass at Ball State.
Mm-hmm. I love glass blowing.
Me too.
In Focus opens at the Anderson Museum of Art on April 4th and runs through May 24th. The 44th annual juried exhibition features the work of Indiana photographers.
Very cool. Ball State's Opera Theater program will perform at 7:30 p.m. Friday, April 4th at Sursa Performance Hall. The theater program will present Cendrillon by Pauline Viardot and Notes on Viardot by Michael Ching.
On Wednesday, April 9th, RESPECT takes the stage at Emmons Auditorium. RESPECT is an electrifying tribute celebrating the music of legendary Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. Mm-hmm. Starring a live band and supreme vocalist, this concert experience takes audiences on a journey of love, tragedy, courage, and triumph. BSU.edu/Emmons has more info.
Mm-hmm. Blood Wedding will be performed Friday, April 11th in the Coors Guard Dance Studio at Ball State. Blood Wedding explores the inevitability of fate and the passionate forces that drive human actions. That's going to be some good choreography.
The Ball State Chamber Choir will present Romantic Gems and Minnesota Melodies Friday, April 11th at Sursa Performance Hall. Under the direction of Andrew Crow, this performance will showcase a captivating blend of timeless classics and contemporary works.
Do you have something classic or contemporary pop of culture listeners need to know about? Tell us at indianapublicradio.org/contact, then click Pop of Culture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. Our digital content god is August Lee. And our producer and devil's advocate is Luke Jones.
I don't know about that.
Special thanks this week to Kevin Klinger. And our show was hosted by me, Kara Duquette.
And me, Michelle Kinsey. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University. I bought some of the.
Thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
What is whipped honey?
So it's our honey whipped to a spreadable consistency, so it's aerated, and then he adds freeze dried powder of organic produce, which is how he gets the flavoring in. He doesn't use any extracts.
Come on.
I know. See?
Yeah, it's really good.
And then that way, you just easily, just like right on the toast.
Oh, like yeah. It's going on toast. It's going from a spoon to my mouth.
I know. We always say we're in judgment free zone.